Everyone, good morning. Welcome to Friday. This is First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is Nick Wright hanging out with us today. Chris Canty and Chris Mannix. That's going to be confusing.
What up,
you know,
what
we'll
what
go last
up,
names
man.
Only.
Good to see you.
I like you without a tie. I like this Friday no tie thing you got going.
I didn't get the memo though, Jenna. I don't know what happened.
No, these two did.
For me, it was somewhat random. Mannix never rocks a tie.
I do rock ties. It's just I've been on the road too long. I don't have a second one.
Oh, okay.
That's here yesterday. You got my one tie yesterday.
Oh, you were wearing a tie yesterday. My apologies. I forgot.
Come on.
My bad.
There you go.
It's just I just wear what's laid out for me. I have no say.
We got a ton to break down from yesterday's NBA trade deadline. We're going to start this morning with the action on the court. The new look, small ball Houston Rockets. Paid the Lakers a visit last night. How about this? With Clint Capella traded away, there was nobody over 6'6 in the Rockets' starting lineup. And it worked. Russell Westbrook put up 41. New addition, Robert Covington chipped in 14, including 4-for-7 from three. He was clutch down the stretch. Houston went 19-for-42 from deep as a team, beating the Lakers by a final of 121-111. Here is James Harden after the win.
Yeah, we're not smaller. We just, I mean, obviously height-wise, but, you know, heart. Each individual got, you know, big hearts, and we can compete with anybody.
All right, Nick, can the Rockets string a bunch of these wins together playing small ball like this? Can they make some postseason noise this way?
Well, stringing wins together, I think they're going to be a very difficult matchup in the regular season because you don't have time to change your defensive orientation. You don't have time to scheme for them on a night-in, night-out basis like you will in the postseason when you have 2 weeks to dig in on what they do. Here, listen, this was a 112-111 game with 3 minutes left when LeBron gets the and one, and then three consecutive bad offensive possessions by LeBron lead to the Rockets going on, what, a 10-0 run, a 9-0 run, pardon me, to finish the game and end up beating the Lakers by 10. But here's what I know. If you're going to beat this Rockets team, you are going to have to crush them on the glass. They played the Lakers dead even on the glass. They are going to beat you from three. They beat the Lakers by 10 threes last night. That's a 30-point margin from three. If you do not make up for that on the glass, at the free throw line, points in the paint, by an enormous margin, you're not going to be able to take advantage of where their weaknesses are. So, listen, I'm higher on the Rockets than just about anybody outside of maybe Daryl Morey, James Harden, and Russell Westbrook. I think this is a dangerous, tough team before the Capella trade. I do think going further all in on small ball is an intriguing experiment. If there was any team out west built to take advantage of it, it was the team they played yesterday, and the Lakers were not able to take advantage of it. So, listen, I think the Rockets are going to be a headache for anybody. I do think they're more likely to be a dominant final 30 games of the regular season team than postseason team because it's like facing a knuckleballer all of a sudden in a you know, once a month in baseball. You don't really have time to prepare for it like you will in the postseason.
Yeah, and you can beat up on that Houston team in the postseason. Right now, everything is kind of working for them that needs to be working. The last four games, the rebounding's been okay, especially against the Lakers, but they've been able to hold their own on that end. Russell Westbrook, over the last couple of months, has finally decided, look, I'm not a three-point shooter, so I'm just going to go to the basket every single time, only averaging, I think, a couple of threes per game over the last few weeks, so that's working for them. Robert Covington, in his debut, could not have been better. The three-point shooting was there, but his defensive versatility showed in that game. He was switching on everything, so he was excellent in that one. But I am concerned long-term about the rebounding issues this team is going to have, and teams will take advantage of you. They will beat you down in the paint. We saw a couple of examples of when the Lakers finally were able to get the ball into Anthony Davis and not turn the ball over, he was able to dominate on that end of the floor. So I don't know if the Lakers are going to go 1-for-11 from three ever again in a matchup like that. LeBron won't have 2-point fourth quarters ever again like that. So I think things are working now, but I do have long-term concerns about Houston.
Well, here's the deal, Mannix. I mean, when you look at this Houston Rockets team, it was clear that they had to do something because as constituted before this week, they didn't have enough to beat the Clippers or the Lakers. And everybody understands that the Western Conference runs through LA. They can beat up on Denver. They can beat up on Utah. They can beat up on OKC. But if you want to advance to the NBA Finals, you're going to have to go through Staples. And to me, I think the unconventional approach is a calculated risk that Daryl Morey and Mike D'Antoni had to take, because D'Antoni wants to play with pace, and being able to swap out Capella and bring in Robert Covington allows you to do that. Adding him with Daniel House and Eric Gordon and Cephalosha and Rivers and McLemore, all of those guys coming off the bench, it just seems like it makes sense. And you're going to allow some points in the paint to opposing bigs, but the philosophy is that those bigs will have a tougher time covering their wing players on the offensive end than they would being able to collapse on those guys defensively. So you're going to be able to dictate the game by being able to run with pace. And then ultimately at the end of the game, you're hoping that the first three quarters takes its toll yep. and limits the effectiveness of those opposing big men.
Didn't last night show you that if the Lakers are the team they're going to have to beat in the West, that they can do it?
Well, they can do it in nights when they hit 10 more threes, and then right. nights when they are even rebounding with them.
Which is the assumption going with this lineup?
Well, the assumption is the threes. The assumption is the threes, not that they will draw even rebounding. Like the Lakers got 6 offensive rebounds yesterday. Mm-hmm. That can't happen. When you're playing a team that everyone is 6'6 or below, and LeBron was not particularly good. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of teams, by the way, can beat the Lakers in nights when LeBron goes 1 of 8 from three, where he has, like I said, it's 112-111. Then Robert Covington hits an impossible corner three. Anthony Davis is draped all over him. It felt like that was about a 10% shot when he took it, but he made it. Then it's LeBron turnover, LeBron missed three. That's bad. And by the way, I'll be the first to say it, LeBron was bad down the stretch in this game. He was bad down the stretch, you could argue, in both of the Clipper games. He needs to be better in the playoffs in those spots. This is an experiment for Houston, and it's an unprecedented one. I understand why they're doing it. I think they understand, even with James and Russ, they are not as good as the Lakers. They might not be as good as the Clippers. So they need to shake the snow globe a bit and see if they can add variance to a playoff series. It also could lead to them getting blown out in the first round. It could lead to them facing a Denver or Utah team that they just can't match up with. But it also, I think, gives them the only real shot they have of making their first NBA Finals in a quarter century.
Here's the biggest question they have to address. They're going to be able to score on anybody. They'll put up
150. And they already were the number two scorer.
Already, right? Yep. But they went up against the Lakers and were really good defensively against the top 5 offensive team. In the last 3 games, in the fourth quarter, they're only giving up less than 20 points per game. Yep. They gave up 2 second chance points in the last 3 games in the fourth quarter. If those numbers hold up, they can go to the NBA Finals. Like, yep. That's how good the Rockets can be. But those numbers, to me, feel more like the exception rather than the rule. This is still a team that is vulnerable defensively on the inside. This is still a team that's going to give up a whole bunch of second chance points. So I'm going to need to see this over a month, 2 months, before I buy into the Rockets as a team that can compete.
Yeah, of course it's a risk. We don't know if it's going to work in the postseason, but this is how D'Antoni wants to play. And the one thing I do like about it is that it accentuates the strengths of your best players, James Harden and Russell Westbrook, because all of a sudden now those guys got room to work because the opposing teams have to worry about those other guys that are solid perimeter shooters. Everybody on this roster, the guys that they're playing in this rotation, are solid to good knockdown shooters. So I think that creates open lanes for those guys to get in the paint. You saw it last night with Russell Westbrook dropping 41. He's on an incredible streak. He's got, 24 straight games, over 20 points. And then James Harden last night was a slow night for him, but he's coming off of back-to-back 40-point performances. So I think that this is a calculated risk, but it was a necessary chance that they had to take, and they're going for it. They're pushing all their chips to the table. We'll see if this style is able to have success once we get to playoff basketball.
And you mentioned it. One of the reasons I liked the Russ trade before the year wasn't just you get off CP3, who clearly wasn't working, but Russ is going to have more space and more shooting around him than he's ever had in his career. Early in the season, he was not taking advantage of it because he thought he was part of the shooting. Mm-hmm. Ned, to your point, now he is just driving and kicking or driving and finishing, and you're seeing the best version of Russ you've seen in a couple years. I think it's going to look really good in the regular season. I think the Rockets, it wouldn't shock me if they climb all the way to the 2 line. I don't think they will, but I think that's in play. What is concerning for them and what we won't know is when a team, especially a smart defensive team, has 2 weeks to drill down on exactly what you do poorly, how that's going to look in a playoff series.
But the performance last night and the win, that's going to build confidence 100%. For these guys because this is an experiment. Nobody knows how it's going to work, but being able to beat the team with the second best record in basketball on the road, that's huge.
Who's already beaten you twice this year?
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, on to the Warriors. Yesterday, they traded D'Angelo Russell to the Timberwolves for Andrew Wiggins, a 2021 top three protected first rounder, and a 2022 second round pick. The Golden State Warriors are 12-40. The Golden State Warriors have the worst record in the NBA.
Okay, hold on. Go ahead, Jenna. Sorry.
I'm just curious what you made of all this. You didn't like the trade?
Listen, admittedly, while I love the NBA, I love it. I have been in full football mode for about 4 months now. Obviously, even more so with my hometown Chiefs playing in the Super Bowl. Just got back from Miami. So maybe I've been a little disconnected. So I do have to ask our NBA insider and also boxing insider Chris Mannix a question. Is there another Andrew Wiggins in the league? Are there two guys? Is it guys like with the same names? Or is this the guy that was the number one pick for the Cavs, traded for Kevin Love, and has arguably the worst contract in the sport?
Same guy.
That's the guy? Man, we are light years away from the Warriors being light years ahead of the whole rest of the league. The hell you doing, Bob Myers? The next time Steph Curry takes the court, he's going to be 32 years old because he had a hand amputation, evidently. It is the world's worst hand injury we've ever seen. You have two untradeable contracts now. Draymond's 4 for 100. Draymond has specific value for your team. I'm not saying Draymond's a bad player. I'm saying even if he's a good player, that contract is not movable because he's unique to what you do with Steph and Clay. Wiggins is horrifying. All the smart numbers show you he's never been contributing factor to winning at any point in his career, except for 10 games to start this season, and then he went right back to being Andrew Wiggins. What they did here was they traded the better player, and D'Angelo Russell's not a perfect player, but when they got him, we knew it was to flip him at some point, right? They traded a better player on a bad contract for a worse player on a bad contract, and they got a pick back. That needs to have gone the other way. You flip D'Angelo plus your pick coming this year, this offseason, for a contributor now. By the time LaMelo Ball or whomever the hell you draft this year is ready to compete, Steph's going to be 36 years old and you're done. I cannot. This is the most shocking NBA trade as far as that. What are you thinking in recent memory? There have been shocking trades. Like, I didn't see Paul George getting traded, but I understood the logic of it. Can you help elucidate this for me? Like, what is the logic of this if you're Golden State?
No, I don't like this trade at all for Golden State for a lot of the same reasons you just articulated there. I off the top, I love this trade for Minnesota because now you're the rebuilding Timberwolves. You've got Towns, you've got Russell, great relationship with those two guys. You are starting the process of digging your way out of this hole. But my whole thing with D'Angelo Russell was hold on to him through the trade deadline. Minnesota's thirst for D'Angelo Russell was
not going anywhere.
Like they have been pursuing him for 7 months. They would have pursued him for 3 or 4 more. You wait that out. If you still want to trade and make the same deal, that would still be on the table. But by taking Russell out of the equation, you remove yourself from the possibility of going big game hunting this offseason. Russell has proven in two different systems that he is an all-star caliber player. He was in Brooklyn and in a different system in Golden State. I thought he was really good so far this year. So if you get to the end of the season, and let's say the lottery ping pong balls go your way, you get the second pick in the draft.
Sure.
You can take D'Angelo Russell and the second pick in the draft and see what's out there. See what's available.
What happens,
Nick? We just talked about Ben Simmons and Philadelphia. What happens if they fizzle out in that first round?
Of course.
You can go to Philadelphia and say, hey, D'Angelo Russell and the second pick in the draft. You can draft Anthony Edwards. You can draft James. You can do whoever you want. And you can have a point guard who might fit better playing alongside Joel Embiid. Without it, you have Wiggins, who is not going to have anywhere near the same value in that type of trade.
Wiggins is a bad basketball player. He's owed $95 million over the next 3 years, starting next year. It's unspeakable they did this. People think I dislike the Warriors. There's things they've done that have irritated me. But going into this year, I said I thought they could be the sixth seed. I thought that if Klay came back at the end of the season, they could be dangerous. And that starting next year, we'll see if they can rejuvenate the old Splash Brother 15-16 team and be dangerous. It's over for them now. We will never see Steph in another NBA Finals, ever. They have no path forward. Draymond's 30. Klay's 30. Steph's about to be 32 when he takes the court again in mid-March, one would assume. They are Draymond, Wiggins, Klay, and Steph next year, $128 million for the cap. Cap's 115. They have no way to get better now. And you can say, oh, well, now they have their top five pick. If Minnesota's terrible next year, a good pick there. Man, young players do not help you in the playoffs, unless you're the Raptors. The last young player to make a big impact in the NBA Finals prior to the Raptors was Kawhi 7 years ago. I can't believe Bob Myers did this. I'm shocked that they went this route instead of what you're saying. Take your own pick, pair it with your best asset that you actually might move, and try to get someone that can help you. I would have loved to see Steph Curry's live reaction to this because he now has to go play with Andrew Wiggins.
There's going to be a little bit of Schadenfreude there for Nick. You've always been sort of.
Well, yeah, but I would have liked to see them again have it like with the old, the pre-KD Warriors. And I guess we'll see it, but Andrew Wiggins going to be out there taking terrible long twos.
Quickly, that's their point. They are hoping Andrew Wiggins becomes Harrison Barnes and that they can put together a finals type of team. I'm skeptical for the same reasons you are, but maybe a change of scenery changes Wiggins. I doubt it, but that's the only thought.
It's 6 years in.
I honestly haven't seen you this fired up about
it's just two blocks ago
what Giannis did in the East.
It's just insane.
Let's move on to Los Angeles now. Yesterday, we reported an arms race between the Clippers and the Lakers over the services of Knicks forward Marcus Morris. And the Clippers went out and got him, all part of a three-team deal with the Knicks and the Wizards. As for the Lakers, they decided to stay put, reportedly refusing to part ways with Kyle Kuzma or Danny Green. Mannix, are the Clippers now the best team in L.A. after what happened yesterday?
No, I think they're on the same level as the Lakers because, I mean, Kawhi and Paul George versus LeBron and AD, I mean, it's kind of a coin flip at this point. Might depend on the supporting cast around them. The Lakers would have been bonkers to make that deal. If the Knicks turn around, and they did ask for Kyle Kuzma, and they wanted Danny Green, if the Lakers made that deal, what are you doing? I like Marcus Morris. He has been excellent this year, 44% from three. But you don't trade a proven playoff two guard in Danny Green, who is like the perfect role player out there. And you don't just dump Kyle Kuzma for 1 year of Marcus Morris. So this kind of went, Nick, how I thought it would go yesterday. Sitting here talking to you about this, the Clippers had these two assets. They had the contract of Harkless, and they had that first round pick burning a hole in their pocket. They made the deal to get in, to get him in that place. Yep. So now they get a guy that can help.
Yep.
But I don't know if it changed the dynamic significantly in the conference.
All right, so I'm further down on the Clippers than just about anybody. The Clippers got better. Mm-hmm. Marcus Morris, I don't think the 44%, the league's second best high volume 3-point shooter, is sustainable. But 38% certainly is. It's what we've seen over a number of years for him. That helps. During the regular season, where I think in the West seeding matters, when, you know, Kawhi takes 1-4 games off and Paul George is, you know, deals with nagging injuries, having Marcus Morris there will help you. And come the playoffs, I watched for your beloved Boston Celtics, Marcus Morris, not give LeBron problems, but not back down.
Not afraid of
him.
He's
a big guy. He's tough. He and his brother are real legitimate NBA tough guys. And so this does help the Clippers. I'm not going to sit here and act like the Lakers are lucky they didn't get him. No, he would have helped the Lakers. But this doesn't fill the single real need for the Clippers in my mind, which is rim protection. And it doesn't fill anything of a need for the Lakers. The last thing they need is another front court player. What they need is a ball handler, playmaker, or shooter, preferably all of the above. And if they can get Darren Collison for nothing, then the Lakers, to me, actually, they didn't necessarily add the better player, but they did more to improve their team. The question for the Lakers is this. You know, not just because he has hair now like Eminem once did, but will the real Kyle Kuzma please stand up, or is he already standing up? Last night he got two baskets. They were both spoon-fed to him by LeBron. He caught LeBron, got him the ball at the rim, and he finished. Kuzma is going to have to figure out, can he play on both ends of the court with the requisite maturity and intensity that is going to be needed to be in the playoff rotation? That is the first question for the Lakers. The second question for the Lakers is this. Can Frank Vogel have the stomach to do something that last year Luke Walton did not? Sit Rajon Rondo down. They can't survive the Rondo minutes. And if they get Collison and he takes Caruso's minutes instead of Rondo's minutes, that will be a disaster. Last night they lose the game by 10. They're minus 14 in Rondo's minutes, in his limited minutes. Rondo might be a good locker room guy. People might like him. He's not an effective player for the Lakers. He never has been. So those to me are the bigger questions. For the Clippers side of things, they got better and Harkless was doing nothing for him. So I think it's a smart move by them. I don't think it's a huge move.
And I think, look, I'm with you on the Rondo minutes needing to be cut. I think Caruso should be getting all of them at this point. And if you bring in Darren Collison, that's where those minutes ultimately come from. I don't have confidence with 2 months to go in the regular season that Kyle Kuzma is going to figure it out.
Nope.
That all of a sudden it's going to click and he's going to be the third option that they so badly need. The biggest problem he runs into is that the way Frank Vogel sets his rotation, it's never Kuzma out there alone as the leader of the second unit, because they always have either LeBron or Anthony Davis on the floor. And when one of those two guys is on the floor, Kuzma's still in that same position looking for offense. Now, I thought Frank has done some nice things around the fringes, trying to run more plays for Kuzma, get him going. But Kyle Kuzma, his first couple of years in the league, was just like this volume scorer. He was on bad teams, and he was allowed to chuck up a bunch of shots, and it didn't really have any consequences. Now, he's asked to be more of a selective shooter, a spot-up three-point shooter, and right now, that's not his game. I'm not convinced, Nick, that it can never be his game. I think he's young enough and talented enough that if you give him another couple of off seasons, he could develop into that type of guy. But for this season, short term, I just don't see it.
Do the Lakers feel like they sort of untapped potential with Kyle Kuzma? Would they have given up Kyle Kuzma if Danny Green wasn't attached to that?
I think they would have. If it would have been Kyle Kuzma and Quinn Cook and Jared Dudley, like contracts to make it work, I think they do it. I think because they are in win right now mode, the only hope for Kuzma, I shouldn't say the only hope, the best hope for Kuzma is, now trade deadline's over, he knows he's going to be there, that is
all the
a moment.
Uncertainty is gone.
Right, that's a moment of, okay, I have to do my best to make this work. I just don't, all his friends got traded away. Honestly, like, who does he hang with? Who does he play Xbox with? Like, these are real things for a young NBA guy living in LA trying to figure it out. And I think it's been tough on him. And I think for guys, as I said yesterday, when you have not yet been paid, you have guys in your ear telling you, man, the way to get paid is to score. And for Kuzma, what he's going to have to realize is the way to get paid is to be on a champion. If you're on a champion and you have two good moments in an NBA Finals can get you paid as much as two good months on a bad team, I don't know if he recognized that. But now he's on the Lakers. He's going to be on the Lakers. See if he can make the most of it.
Nick, do LeBron and AD and company have enough to make a title run?
I think they absolutely have enough. I think that they are, though, missing a piece. I think that piece is going to come in the form of Darren Collison, which is this offseason, if you remember, once they missed out on Kawhi, the top two free agents I wanted them to go after were Danny Green and Darren Collison, with Seth Curry, not Steph Curry, Seth Curry mixed in there as well. Collison then retired, and so they made up where they could, the Avery Bradley move, some other smaller moves, Boogie Cousins, who obviously has done, you know, got hurt and done nothing for him. As presently constituted, they have enough. But it is so much on LeBron's shoulders. Now, I think he can handle it, because he's handled it throughout his career, and I think he will up his game in the postseason, because he's done that throughout his career as well. But Darren Collison, to me, is a much better addition for them than Marcus Morris would have been. Marcus Morris helps the Clippers. It's a good move. I'm not going to act like, the Lakers lucked out by not getting him. But I wouldn't have traded Kuzma and Danny Green for Marcus Morris ever. I think Danny Green is more valuable in the postseason than Marcus Morris will be. Kuzma, I have questions about. But if they don't get Darren Collison, will they still be my pick to make the NBA Finals out of the West? Yes. But LeBron's going to play 42 minutes a night, and they're going to have to solve their Rajon Rondo problem somewhere else.
Yeah, the margin for error for the Lakers is paper thin right now. I mean, you have got to be, LeBron's got to be great, Davis has got to be great.
And healthy.
And healthy. You know, everything's got to kind of click for them to get past those teams in the Western Conference, and then you get to the finals, and then you get Milwaukee. That's a separate conversation. I'm with you. I would not have made the deal if it meant Kyle Kuzma and Danny Green. I don't think that makes you better short or long term. Marcus Morris, a free agent at the end of the year. Danny Green signed to a two-year deal. Kyle Kuzma signed to a two-year deal. Collison interests me because if we're getting Darren Collison from the last 2 years, massive upgrade right away. But he hasn't played basketball since last spring. I don't get the sense, like Andre Iguodala, that he was working out every day in preparation for coming back to play. So I saw him sitting next to Jeannie Buslax last night. The eyeball test of the guy in a sweater. Look, he looks like he's in decent shape, but how long does it take Darren Collison to get into game shape? How effective can he be throughout the course of this season? I'm going to have to see that first before I believe he's a big upgrade over guys like Rondo and others.
Well, I think what you're looking for from Darren Collison is for him to be a factor in terms of being a ball handler, playmaker in the second half of the regular season. We know once we get to the postseason, that's going to be Bron. It's not going to be anybody else, but you got to get him there healthy. And right now with the usage and only having Alex Caruso as somebody that you can rely to spell him with the ball handling, I think that's the biggest thing. So, Jenna, the point you bring up about LeBron and AD's health is absolutely right. They don't have a huge margin of error. Those two guys have to be great in order for the Lakers to compete for a title. So I'm looking at this from the standpoint that you do have to find a way to be able to get the ball out of LeBron's hands just so you can have him at his best when it matters the most. That's my biggest concern. Outside of that, I mean, would you like to have a little more perimeter shooting? Absolutely. You don't really have a lot of knockdown shooters on that roster, Danny Green, KCP, and you really don't have a lot of confidence in anybody else. But, I mean, I don't think that there was a deal to be made that you would feel comfortable with at the deadline, because I'm with you guys. I think the price of Kuzma and Danny Green would have been too much for Marcus Morris.
But Marcus Morris, while he doesn't give you rim protection for the Clippers, he gives you three guys that can guard LeBron James, which is really the conversation we're having now is the Clippers and the Lakers.
Well, listen, 100%, Jenna, and I thought the Lakers were going to get Andre Iguodala. They didn't get him. They were in on Marcus Morris. They didn't get him. And so I'm not going to sit here and act like the trade deadline went the way the Lakers would have hoped. But I thought they were going to get Andre Iguodala for nothing. I thought he was going to be a buyout guy, and he ends up coming over. Instead, Memphis, to their credit, held on to him. And I like Justice Winslow. When he's healthy, he's a good player. So good for Memphis. It worked out for all parties involved. The asking price for Marcus Morris was too rich for my blood or the Lakers' blood. I wouldn't have traded Marcus Morris for Danny Green straight up. Even if he's a more effective regular season player for what the Lakers need in the postseason, I trust Danny Green more. So I obviously Green and Kuzma for more is something I wouldn't do. If they don't add Collison, then I do think there is a level of concern only in this regard. You mentioned it's going to be Bron in the playoffs. Yeah, for 40 minutes, maybe 42 minutes. Those other 6 or 8 minutes can ruin a game if it's Rondo. And Rondo last night played 14 minutes. They were outscored by 14 points. He has been an anchor around this team's neck for 2 years. And for some reason, neither coach, whether it was Walton or Vogel, seemed to understand that, or maybe they just don't trust Caruso enough. I feel like you would trust Collison to take those minutes from him.
You trust Collison, and he addresses the perimeter shooting problems because at his best, he is a terrific spot-up shooter. So if you want to create the lanes for LeBron and AD to do that, you have it. I do think, if you're the Lakers, without the Collison signed right now, you're cringing a little bit because of Marcus Morris, because the Clippers effectively gave up nothing. Harkless wasn't doing anything for them. A first-round pick, who cares, at least when it comes to this year. They got themselves a guy that makes shots, who's battle-tested in the playoffs, and as you said, can defend LeBron James. It almost increases the urgency to get Darren Collison in a uniform and get him part of that mix.
Right.
Well, real quick, do you have an apology, by the way?
For whom?
My guy, J.R. Smith. You were body shaming him yesterday.
I don't know. He was in an ice tub
with Kevin Hart. Yeah, he's not game ready.
Yeah. Oh, not game ready. Did you see he was getting a tryout this week with the Lakers?
When he signs.
Okay,
we'll
I'm just saying, JR, you know who always had your back. He's out here body shaming you. I'm saying he could be a key piece off the bench for the Lakers.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern.